February 7, 2019 is the Joaquin Pedro Show.
Thank you. Watt for Pedro show. Hey, Brother Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
The three storms in a row is gone.
Yes, beautiful.
Yeah.
A little chilly, but pretty nice.
Yeah, a little chilly.
Not chilly to most people's standards.
Not in the high 50s.
Pretty beautiful.
But not a cloud in the sky.
Yeah.
And not having to repair a row of palms because of the... Got tore up with the... I mean, the waves were pounded.
Yeah, yeah, and the waterfall.
I cannot believe how the breakwater could... Yeah, it was going over the breakwater onto the pier.
Yeah, yeah, splash, total splash.
We didn't have dudes surfing inside the breakwater. It wasn't that intense.
But the rope pump, man, that waterfall gets flowing.
Yeah, and of course, I had to see a joke. Oh, homeless shower. People have a fucking... Or what about people who take pictures of homeless people?
Some of them put some crazy pictures up.
Yeah, that's a karma investment that I don't need. Look, we started off the show with the night. We called it a day. John Coltrane with Milt Jackson on the vibes there. And then our guest, Mikhail.
Hey.
Tolbert.
Hello.
Hi.
With Secret Song. Welcome aboard. You're in New York City, right?
Yes, well, I'm actually in New Jersey in Tenafly, but it's right over the George Washington Bridge from New York City.
Yeah, but probably people from both states wouldn't want me getting that shit confused. Like the Orange Curtain here or something like that. Yeah. Or even We Must, right? We Must is We Must. Pedro's Pedro. But we both share the harbor. Mikhail, can you tell me, what's the name of the town again?
It's called Tenafly.
Tenafly.
Mm. Wow.
Yes, it's from the Dutch. It's from Tien Vlaai, which means 10 swamps, which doesn't sound very flattering.
10 flocks?
10 swamps.
Oh, 10 swamps.
Cool.
Yes, as in swamps full of mosquitoes.
Yeah, right. Yellow fever almost took out Memphis twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not that long ago, yeah. Either.
It gets up downtown, I think.
You've got to watch out,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I think even some Nile in Riverside, some Nile virus. They're vectors. Mm. The worst was a year and a half ago. I did 11 gigs in Italy with the Nile. And 10 of the towns, 10 different in Zanzara, they call them.
Man.
That bit the fuck out of me. I thought I had cancer. These things grew up the next day like tumors.
Wow.
Or meatballs. I'm still looking at pictures people took of me and like, oh my God, mumps. Mikhail, what's your earliest musical memory?
My earliest musical memory? Let's see. Well, my parents took me to a Philip Glass concert, but that's kind of like urban legend at this point, because apparently that's what inspired me to ask for classical piano lessons. But I think probably my earliest musical memory
You mean what you're saying is you have a false implanted memory?
Probably, yeah. Aren't all memories false implanted memories?
False, all airbrushed and spun up, you know, to make the now. Like I was, getting into Wittgenstein, old Ludwig, right? And he's got like he had two theories. First time, words or pictures? Nah, that's wrong. Words are tools. Okay. So, what memory do you trust the best to be in your earliest?
I think probably my parents listening to the Beatles around the house, or like Elton John or Billy Joel, something like that.
can I ask if you're, were they just listeners or were they players too?
My dad plays a lot of different instruments. Not anymore, but, you know, he used to play the piano and the guitar and the sitar.
So you grew up in a house with a piano?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And a sitar?
Well, they left the sitar in Israel, because I was born in Israel, and then they moved back to the States, so that didn't make it back when they moved back.
So that would make a special trip.
So what do you think of the Beatles and Elton John now? He was just in town this week. Are you tired of them after hearing them for so long, or you still get a little enjoyment from them?
I'm still nostalgic for that music. It's definitely, you know, it warms my heart when I hear it.
Okay, here's the next question. If there's a piano in the house, did your parents want you to learn piano?
Well, I wanted to learn very young, so I actually asked them for lessons, and I started studying when I was 5.
Now, can I ask you the piano question I ask everybody? Did you have a teacher you hated?
I had a teacher that I loved, and she's in her 90s now, and she's still one of my mentors
and
very good friends.
Cool. Let's give her a name.
Her name is Mrs. Lisa Grad, and she was a private teacher on Central Park West, and she was wonderful, wonderful woman.
Cavell. No, because we've heard so many stories about people almost being turned off from music because of lame piano teachers.
Yeah, no, I was very, very lucky. I've heard many, many horror stories as well, but she really inspired me. And even when I was 13 and I heard Nirvana and I decided I wanted to become a rock star and pick up the guitar, she encouraged me to do that. She wasn't upset that I left the classical piano path.
You know, me and Dako Jones have talked about this Sunday. Rock and roll actually is piano music. The guitar came later. Yeah, think about it. Little Richard.
Little Killer.
And even think about the 20s and 30s, Jelly Roll.
Yeah.
And the Boogie Woogie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's where rock and roll's from. It's a mule.
That's
you know?
A really good point.
Yeah. Thing is, it's hard to get a piano around, and also they're kind of expensive, a little spendy.
That's where those accordion came in.
Yeah, accordion. Yeah. Also some Euro culture there. Pizza plays accordion.
Yeah.
But I could see how, guitar, econo, and maybe a little easier to play. Although, man, having one button for every note. So, okay, what about it? Can you remember the first record you bought yourself?
The first record I bought was Nirvana Nevermind, and the first record I stole was Soul Asylum Grave Dancers Union.
Oh. And you're confessing to it now, okay.
Nice.
In the first gig you think you went to, but maybe you're mistaken, was Philip Glass.
Yes.
Which is the first gig you're sure of that you went to?
I saw the Black Crowes. That was my first, big concert.
No, it don't have to be big concert, just gig.
I don't know what my first gig would have been. That's a really good question. I have to ask myself.
Yeah, but there's no wrong answer. There's no wrong answer. Okay, what about at school? Were you part of the choir or the school band, a marching band?
I was part of chorus, and I was part of band. And I tried to get into jazz chorus, and I could not get in because they didn't think that I could sing.
And what kind of you sing very well, though. What did you try to play?
I played piano, and I played drums, and I was terrible at that.
Jazz band, okay.
But how cool that you've gone beyond that one place that said you couldn't sing. It's like your teacher told you could.
Mr. Luna.
Michael Jordan's coach told him he couldn't play.
Yeah, my music in seventh grade, I tried the 10-week elective, and me and 10,000 other guys wanted saxophone, so they gave me a clarinet. And after the end of 10 weeks, wow, do you get the next 10 weeks? Mr. Luna says, Mr. Watt, you try hard, but stop wasting your time. My time, and then he looks at the class. Our time.
It just goes to show you, though.
Brother Matt, you know what a farmer would tell you. If you want a good crop, use a lot of manure. So it brings money.
Yeah, it just goes to show you. Don't let one dude's opinion stop you.
Yeah, look, I want to play this song before tonight. Anything to say about that?
So this is a love song, and it's about pining for this, very deep, passionate love and not having it.
All right, pining.
Just the thought of you can ruin. like a movie star. And just the thought of you can ruin my life. The things I do to you aren't right. You touch my soul.
Ovo je pravo vrijeme, sada je pravi čas. Već dugo smo na putu, ali sada se nazire kraj. Jer ovo bi mogao biti pravi izgledaj. Moglo biti pravo rješenje za nas. Zapamti ovaj trenutak, mjesto, datum i stan. Premda slutimo propast, možda doći će spas. Jer ovo bi mogao biti pravi izlaz za nas. Pravi izlaz za nas. Pravi izlaz za nas. Pravi izlaz za
skin. A hunger accidentally awoken. And I can't go back to sleep without you by my side. I look for you as soon as my eyes open. The ravages of my life leave me choking, and I won't get back on my knees.
For Pedro Show. Yeah, we heard before tonight, Mikhail Tober. After that, Mini Beast, that's got Peter from, what are they called? Mission of Burma. He's got his own band now, Mini Beast. And What the Fuck Times Two. I thought that was intense. Like camping. And then something from Turkey, Kuniyet Sepeci with Osman Aga with Taksim. I think that word with is English. Brand new from Toulon, France, Hi-Fi Club, Frere Isis, just did collaboration, well, got it going, with Natural. They've got a new album out of collaborations with people over there. Sun Watchers and Eugene Chaborn out of New York City, they recorded this Minuteman song, I Felt Like a Gringo Wilson interpretation, their own version, of course, Professor Huge, out of North Carolina, and Sexa from Croatia, live. Tebi Chertom and Shumsky. Pravi Islas. Shumsky was Zagreb too, and on the show a couple weeks ago. Great cats. I think the bassman Cornell wrote me. He had a gig in Ljubljana last night.
Ah. Yeah.
And then Lauren, brand new, a bunch of rarities with 555, 555. 555-5555. Yeah, it's a phone number without an area code. There was a lot of songs in the swing days of phone numbers.
Yeah,
I think people, sailors would meet ladies, right? after paying the dime for the dance. So the phone number was a big dealio, yeah. Pennsylvania. And then finally, another happy song from Mikhail Toler, Tragedy. That's about a successful love affair, right?
No. Yeah.
No, no.
I feel like I should have set the record out with like razor blades. Like, no, look, sorry.
We weren't expecting a bunch of Weird Al Yankovic. Okay. Now, there's some accordion, brother Matt. He's got something there. Look, while you were trying music in school and they were putting you down in this, did you do the stuff after school, like a garage band, bedroom band, a basement band?
I always tried to be in bands, and I was in various bands, but I never found collaborators that were really, like, I was able to vibe with and that were as passionate about my music as I was. So even though I was in a bunch of different bands, I never was, like, part of a real unit, you know? I kind of was always a solo operator.
Well, what about playing in front of people? Can you remember the first time you did that?
Yes. Well, I played a bunch of classical concerts when I was very young, but then my first gig with my own music was when I was 13, and I played at Sidewalk Cafe on Avenue A and 6th Street, which, you know, has had one of the longest running open mics in New York City, and my mentor Latch used to run it, and they're actually getting new owners, and they're not going to be doing music there anymore, so it's kind of the end of an era.
Wow. You know, there was an era before that. That neighborhood was called Alphabet City.
Yes.
And it was, right, like holes in the hatch where you stick the money to get the dope. Yeah. Richard Hell told me about Intense. He was there before that even. I think he moves there in 1970. So 7 months, landlord didn't even come around.
Wow.
$12 a month. Yeah, I was pretty beat up. You would never. I just saw some bass thing that Tina Weymouth did for the BBC people. Did you see this doc?
No.
And she was talking about how it changed. But I think that town and that, also New Jersey, all that area, always changing, all very dynamic.
And it's really become very gentrified now. But, you know, when I was 13, it was in 93. And it still was kind of, it had character still, even though it was a lot better than in the 70s, obviously. But it wasn't anything like what it is now. Now it's like super bougie. And
actually, she was saying that stuff, too. Her and her husband, Chris, still live there, but, you know, they're looking for CBs, and they found a clothes store and some shit like that. Anyway, not to get all negative and cynical, but that gig that you did, were you scared?
Yeah, I definitely was scared. I think I had
13
so
years
much more
old playing in New York City at an open mic.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, my guitar was out of tune and I cried, I believe.
Okay.
So I definitely was scared. But I came back. I didn't give up and I got
back.
Yeah,
yeah. That's great. But you did try to join bands. It just didn't. What about after high school and shit? College, did you do that stuff?
Well, I was signed to Sony Columbia when I was 17. So right when I graduated
high
school,
I remember that.
I
should do a disclaimer here, Mikhail. I was a Columbia artist for 14 years. Mm.
And
in fact, that's how I know Howard Wolfen.
Very
so
nice.
In a way, thanks to Kevin Bacon, me and you are connected. And Howard.
Two degrees of separation.
But I remember, I do remember you joining the, yeah, okay, you were only 17.
Yeah,
how'd that
so
happen?
I actually put off going to college for a few years.
Yeah, but how did that happen? Did somebody come to the coffee house?
I was playing gigs for like 4 years around the city, and I played CMJ in 97, and I played at Arlene's Grocery at 2 in the morning, and Don DeVito came to see me, and that's how I got signed.
Okay. Yeah. So, how was that experience?
It was mixed, you know. I mean, I remember being really excited about getting signed, but I always felt somehow like it wouldn't work out, and I don't know if that's just my pessimistic personality, but I always felt like something was going to go wrong and, like, the other shoe was going to drop. And it was kind of a difficult period of time because I deferred going to school and I was living at home with my parents and all of my peers, you know, went to college and were moving on with their lives. And I was on Columbia, but they were like, hurry up and wait, basically. And it took forever to get my record done. And when I delivered it, they didn't hear hits. And so I had to remake the record.
Oh, shit.
They didn't want me to tour. You know what? They were like,
that is such a typical story, right? Same old, you were talking about Soul Asylum. They had to do something like that, re-record the album. My experience was so much different. I had 100% complete control. I just had to deliver finished masters. I remember when I brought my first record in, they sent me to the, they thought I was a delivery guy, and they sent me to the mail room. But my product manager, you know, Peter Fletcher, all those cats, they loved me. You know, I had already done 11 years on SST. I'd never had to go through that stuff I heard all the other people had to go do. But then I never took tour support. I was econo. In fact, they wanted me to do talks to their young bands because some of these people thought getting signed just meant, you know, you got a little free ride on the gravy train. They didn't know that was step one of, like, Nightmare City, you know. if you let it happen. They were just always, I don't have one horror story from my 14 years at a major label.
Well, you were probably a lot savvier than I was, because I was so young, I had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah, absolutely,
you know?
Absolutely. I was in my 30s.
Yeah, so I could have been a lot smarter. I really didn't know what it meant to be signed to a label, and I didn't have a lot of experience touring. I just had experience playing around New York City.
Well, you know, so I had 11 years with SST, and right, Greg Ginn, they never, hey, you got to do something else, you do what you do. I think we were at, Minuteman was SST 002. So that's where I came from. So, yeah, when it wasn't like, here's the brass ring. Now you have to move into another, which actually means you've earned the right to pay a lot more people. A&R man is taking us out to dinner. No, you're taking him out to dinner. So I kind of knew a little bit about that, but I have to say I have good, because I saw clowns tie the puppet strings to their wrists and ankles and then cry about it later. So that it makes me a little weirded out, but nobody deserves abuse or anything, and I'm so sorry you had to re-record your record and that. But at least you got to do that. That's probably the first time you were in the studio, right?
Yes, So I ended up doing two records with them, and then we parted ways, and I've continued to make records. This is my eighth record, No Resolution, so I've been doing it independently for a while now, and I've had to learn the ropes now as an older person.
No, less younger. We don't have that O word anymore. That O word is out. Same with the word. Same with that P word. You know, look, this thing ends up an MP3 file that lots of different devices can play. It's nothing to do with that fucking P. I don't even think that company, A company, makes that P
right,
device anymore. So why are people, you know, putting on the fucking shill chonies? You know. You know, it's my show with Brother Matt. Okay, that's what it is. It ain't that P word. So the same thing with the O word. We get rid of that. So now you're a little bit less young, but you know what? You're more wise.
That's true. Well, I actually have a song on my record called Old. So I don't know. Can we not play that one because it's called Old?
That, you know what? It's one of the last ones of the thing. Right, right with Cut Me, because Cut here in Pedro means like it's done. I guess directors are like that, right, when they're shooting a movie. Cut! So we're like that. Get scissors, that's another slang for it, right? Your scissors. So I thought those kind of went. And also I got a band from Japan doing Ghost Lanterns after. So it kind of fits in. Sometimes you got to use other people's cuss words. It's okay. It's okay. You must have done some tours.
I did some one-offs. I did, like, a small tour, but I never did, like, a great big.
You never got in a van? Yeah.
Nope. I always wanted to. I always thought that was, like, a very romantic notion, but,
You know the tradition, right?
Vaudeville. What's the tradition?
It's vaudeville. It totally is vaudeville. And it's to me, it's a very proud and happening tradition to come from. Work in the towns, or like they say, work the room.
Yeah, I would have loved to have done that, and there's definitely a part of me that wishes that I did, but you know, my parents were very protective, and they were always kind of whispering in my ear that I had to have a fallback plan and I had to have a profession. And when things didn't work out right away with Columbia, I went back to school. I had deferred Yale, and so I went to Yale. I got my undergrad degree.
Let's hold that for the second hour, Mikhail, because that's the end of the first hour, February 7, 2019. Hold tight for hour two. February 7, 2019. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
When you want to rebel, don't need to go down a hell. I'll do it for you, 'cause I adore you. Just put my
children of the people shall exalt themselves to establish the vision, but they shall fall.
Bye. Dead. Miss Easy Lee and Uncle Rock and Roll. Big ass and big time beats. My old man went from being sad. 21, bright and black eyed kid. He had taste, it's what it must have meant. And for that.
Walk for Pedro show. We start off the second hour with Devil You Love from Mikhail Tolber. And Chris Chappelle's Distortion Pedal. That's a great intro. Military industrial music. Very sexy. Seb Radix, brand new out of Lyon, France. Renaud Didier at Joe. So, yeah, three guys. Guided by Voices, that's good. Bob Marley's got a new album. Like 102. Can't believe that. Out of Cleveland, My Old Man from I Am the Polish Army.
Yeah.
We're going to have her on the...
We just had to pull the ship here in town.
That's right. Three tall ship.
Yeah.
Three masters. Big baby. Like, name's hard, a little hard to say, but she's doing a world tour. It's some good shots. Then Stoma out of Rotterdam with Anesthetize. And finally, Let Me Down Easy, Mikhail Tover. Yeah, those are little well, kind of hopeful songs.
Yeah, there's kind of a split in the album, I would say. Half of it is, like, really depressing and dark, and then half of it is a little bit more pretty and hopeful.
And where'd you record it?
I recorded it at my producer's house in New Jersey.
What
he
town?
Was in South Jersey. What's the town called? I'm blanking on it right now. It's in South Jersey.
On the coast?
Oh, geez. It's close to the shore.
Because they got like a shore scene. Mm. Yeah, I've been. You know, I played Asbury Park. And, in fact, if you look at New Jersey, it looks like a little California turned the other way. You know, because people from the city, they see Newark, and they think that's everything. But that's like looking at, you know, Union 76 Refinery, okay? New Jersey has all kinds of countryside.
Garden State.
Garden State, right. They got a weird way of making less in that Garden State part. They call them jug handles, right? You have to come around.
Oh, wow.
Go on the other side to make your big port.
Trippy.
Yeah, yeah. Jug handles. But, like, Princeton, the only frat party ever played. Princeton frat had fire hose play. And for frat boys, they weren't...
They had good taste.
But where the campus was incredibly beautiful and rural and stuff. New Jersey. Beautiful. So how long did it take, Mikhail?
I just looked it up. It's in Freehold. That's
Freehold, where, okay.
The studio is, sorry. I totally blanked for some reason.
No, that's all right. Freehold, yeah, I think, is... That's the town, no, it's Fremantle, in Perth, right? Because built with prison shit, right? So you would get free, yeah. Great idea. But how long did it take?
We recorded it in basically 6 months, but the whole
rush
process
job.
Of the record took, like, from beginning to end, from my starting to write the songs till the end was about 2.5 years.
And so do you make little things at home, and then you show it to them, and then... Talk about it.
I actually, when I started writing the songs for the record, it was right when Facebook Live came about. And so every time I would write a song, I would perform it on Facebook Live. And then I would get feedback from my community. And I wrote 100 songs for the record, and I picked the top 15.
Yeah, you played 100 songs. Like you played 100 songs on Fake Look for your people. I was talking more about you and the producer. What's his name?
Kaz.
Yeah, Kaz. I thought it was between you and Kaz. You were actually like, you know, the Minutemen had an idea like this, like a ballot result. D-Boom put a ballot in there because we thought the best way to beat a bootleggers was come out with your own live record. So D-Boom says, well, why don't we have these people pick the songs? And it'd be like this idea of voting, right? One song, one vote or some shit. And you kind of did that too. You asked your people.
Yeah, so a lot of it was based on the response that I got. And, you know, I picked the 15 songs based on people's response and also how well they kind of told the narrative of what was going on in my life at that time. So.
Okay, so Kaz was, he was the caboose, right? He was after all this process, right?
Okay. Yeah, and, you know, he was a new producer. He just graduated from Rutgers, and this was the first real record that he'd made. So he was very open to my guidance, and it was very collaborative, the process of making the record. I think it was the most I've ever been involved in production.
Rutgers, Lewis Porter, the guy who wrote my big John Coltrane books. He's a professor. Yeah, good cat.
Cool.
Yeah. So, well, how'd you meet him?
On Facebook.
All right, you emulsified it. It's like the sausage skin, right? Put you guys together, makes the big slurry, keeps the slurry in the tube. Well, really, you met him just by chance on Facebook. Well, wow.
Okay. Yeah, I met him through another producer who I did a session with, and I really didn't like him, but our mutual hatred of this guy helped me reach my producer, because Todd knew him as well.
Yeah, I like to hear more stories like that. Man, because you hear the other kind of stories. Wow. There's a great record, John Wayne, you know this, not the actor, but this band. They were purported from Texas, but they had this record called Texas Funeral. You got to hear it because there's a lot about the producer in the booth and kind of stories. And well, a lot ain't that situation. But you know what? I am glad very much to have Brother Matt here to deliver the spin site.
Hooyah!
grab that girl, prettiest one you can find, and get out and dance with her.
MS and Corky, I want to say thanks for coming by. I want to see you guys dancing on this number.
Team MS.
I was cruising down the parkway in a beat up 53, smoking like a steamship with the police after me. I passed the business district and just then I saw Cadillac dealer sign. Said, hey, train, don't run that car. I pulled up in the alley, told my truck right out the floor. I was halfway through the dealer when the cops flew past the door. I wanted Cadillac, Mr. Dealer, like they built in 55.
Right.
I want a Cadillac, Mr. Dealer, so I can move on down the line.
All right, man.
And when I hit that open roadway, man, I'm really gonna fly. All right, boys, we're gonna fly.
Let's go.
That big black Cadillac, and I took off down the road, and I adjusted my rearview mirror, and I spotted a police car. It was coming after me with the red light all aglow. Well, I locked my wheel around, I took off down that side road. Big Cadillac, she couldn't make the turn, and Tom grabbed a hold of me. And last I saw my Cadillac, it was wrapped around a tree. I want a Cadillac, Mr. Dealer. Like it built in 55,
like it built in 55.
I want a Cadillac, Mr. Dealer, so I can move on down the line.
I can move it on down the line.
When I hit that open roadway, man, I'm really gonna fly. I'm
gonna fly with you now.
I want a Cadillac, Mr. Dealer.
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 I want a Cadillac, Mr. Dealer. So I can move on down the line.
Woo! Yeah, baby.
Oh.
25, well, I got a girl with a record machine. When it comes to rocking, she's a queen. Let's dance on Saturday night. All alone, I can hold her tight. But she lives on 20th floor of town. Elevator's broken down. So I walk one, two, fly, two, fly, four. Five, six, seven, flat, eight, fly, four. On the 10th, I'm starting to drag. 15-4, I'm a ready stack. Get in the car, I'm too tired to rock. Let's call me up on the telephone. Come on over, Lance, I'm all alone. I said, baby, you're mighty sweet. I'm in bed with the aching feet. This went on for a couple of days, but I could not stay away. So I walk on, she fly, she fly, four. Five, six, seven, fly, eight, fly, four. On the 10th, I'm ready to dance. 15, 4, I'm starting to say, get to the top, I'm too tired to run. Hey! Woo-hoo! That's right, boy. Chicago for repairs. She lives in Phoenix, I'm using my stairs. Hope you hurry before it's too late. I love my baby too much to wait. All this time is getting me down. Find my corpse creeped over a rail. But I walk one, two, fly, two, fly, four. Five, six, ten, fly, eight, fly, four. On the 10th, I'm starting to drag. 15, 4, I'm ready to say, get to the top, I'm too tired to rock.
Yeah! All over now. Okay, take it away, boy. Thank you there, sir.
Yeah, it's not a bit. was brown and a little wood. She made me more than just a simple fool. I'm hungry like a cannibal.
Cat, baby, you're a cat.
just played some music by a buddy of ours, Lazy Lance. Cancer took him, 57 years old, and he's a great cat. I mean, this guy lived with cancer for many years. They're cutting tumors out of him for years and years. So much suffering. But he always wanted, he's a great singer and harmonica player. He loved blues.
Yeah, we had some fun.
And, yeah, great cat.
Yeah.
Time Pedro guy, and just never get used to losing people.
Yeah, too many.
Anyway, so sorry for your loss.
Yeah, yeah. You know, me and Brother Matt, we're kind of entering it into this, the less younger area, the more this happens. You know?
Yeah, it's crazy. The longer you live, the more grief you got to encounter.
Yeah.
It's learning to adapt to that.
You're not into that place yet. There's some, no, you are. We all are. But just the odds go up more.
Definitely. I mean, I had a friend that I lost to cancer while I was making the record, actually. Steve Puteski from Marilyn Manson.
Oh, yeah.
Stevie Berkowitz.
Sure.
Yeah, and he wrote one of the guitar lines for one of the songs, The Crash. It's the first song on the record.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, it happens all the time, and even young people obviously pass away. But
too
yeah,
young.
Obviously when you get older,
your career starts. What's that, the hospital in Memphis? St. Jude. These babies born with cancer. I mean, what the fuck did they do?
Yeah, don't get a chance.
Yeah. I know, don't
even get a chance. Well, did you see, supposedly the Israelis found a cure for cancer that's going to be on the market in a year. That's pretty amazing. It's supposed to target like 90% of types of cancer.
That's not good for business.
They're going to have to invent something else to kill us. Then we'll just all have to worry about heart attacks. But,
right, that's good
cancer's
news.
Like a big
that's
one.
Some good news out of Israel.
Thank yeah.
Thank
you. About your record. So, like, Steve came in with a guitar. So, you brought in other musicians, right?
Yes. So, mostly it was just me and Kaz, but I did work with a guitar player who is actually my main collaborator now. His name is AR, and he's an incredible guitar player and saxophonist, and he played on a couple of the tunes on the record.
How'd you meet?
We actually have been friends for 15 years, but we were like pen pals and only communicated over email. And he was the web designer for Robin Fink's website, the guitar player from Nine Inch Nails. And so he connected us 15 years ago, and we stayed friends all this time. And I didn't really know he was an incredible musician until the last couple of years when I was making this record. And then we started collaborating, and he ended up flying out and playing some shows with me, and it just really worked out. That band that I always wanted and that collaborator that I was always looking for was there all along. I just didn't realize it.
But it's another guitarist. But he does sax too, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And,
he actually wrote Secret Song and Bittersweet on the record. So those are his tunes.
Ah, thanks. That's great. What about a rhythm section?
So that was all Kaz. Kaz played some live drums, and he programmed a lot of the stuff, and he played all the bass as well. He's really talented. He plays, like, everything. He's been playing drums since he was, like, 3 years old.
Wow. Actually, it was a three-way then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, because he's not just a producer, a decider, but he's also in there in the trenches playing with you guys.
Yeah, he was the producer, the engineer, and he played most of the stuff on the record. So he really contributed as much as I did on this record.
And his studio's there in Freehold, where he lives. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. In 6 months. So it wasn't 6 months straight. You come there on a weekend or something?
Yeah, exactly. So I basically went there every weekend because I also have three little kids. I have three sons who are 7, 5, and 3. So it's hard for me to escape.
Are they playing?
Are they playing music?
Yeah.
The middle one is talented. I'm teaching him how to play piano, but the other two haven't really shown.
You're starting to sound like those teachers at your school.
I just don't want to push them if they're not passionate about it.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
I want them to like really want to do it and for it to come from inside. I don't want to be like a tiger mom or something. Yeah.
Well, you know, I was talking to Steve, the drummer man for Flaming Lips. He was 6 years old and playing in drums for his daddy in his country western band. Like vaudeville, you would bring the kids into the act. Charlie Hayden, right? Before he did stand-up bass, he was yodeling Cowboy Charlie.
Right.
Yeah, that's the way they did it.
Were your parents musicians, or how did you kind of get interested in music when you were little?
Steve Boone. It was this guy who jumped out of a tree and landed on me. His mom told me to play bass because we were going to have a band.
What good fortune.
But my mom did a little singing for a swing thing in the 30s, the 40s.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. No, I should say 40s. She's still a little girl. Sorry, Ma. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, February 7th, 2019. Hold tight for hour three. February 7th, 2019, it's the third hour of the Watt Pedro Show.
Thank you. my company's the worst. I don't sleep anymore, I'm afraid. My heart is gone. Comes the crash.
For Pedro show, start off the third hour with Mikhail Tober doing affirmation chant. And in your own words about this tune, Mikhail?
This is really the happiest song on the record, and it's basically me telling myself that I'm very resilient, and no matter what happens to me, I'll make it through. So it's kind of like my positive pep talk for myself musically.
Yeah. We need things like that. Mode Omen after that from Baltimore with the first side, Red Light. A live piece. And then I think this is a real good candidate for affirmation chant, The Crash by Mikhail Tober. What's The Crash?
So The Crash is about how I experience really, really high highs and really low lows emotionally. And I go through cycles, especially like when I do something like play a show or I do something creative, that's like a really high high for me. And then after that, there's always like this emotional crash or this come down. And I think, like many artists, I go through periods of depression and anxiety, and music has been very therapeutic for me in getting a lot of those negative emotions out. So this song is about my struggles with those things and just how I try to channel my negative emotions into music.
You know, I just read stuff on Virginia Woolf, and it was always around finishing a book that she got her most wigged out, you know, heavy thing. That's it's trippy how the creative process can be tied to
pre-exhausting.
Yeah, emotional hell. Like, she ended up drowning herself, though.
Yeah. I mean, do you find that when you do something creative that you have, like, an emotional come down afterwards, or you don't go through that as much?
Yeah, you know, if it comes out and I like it, I'm like, God damn, where did that come from? I am very grateful. I am very grateful. The heaviest part for me is making the first, you know, bursting the dam open and getting the shit to flood. And that's why I always have to start with the song title. I have to give some kind of focus so I can, you know, get a crack in that dam. But I think there's billions of ways to do this stuff, and that's why I like to talk about people's musical journey on the Swap from Pedro show. I think I owe it to the movement, because I think there's a lot of different ways to do stuff like this.
Yeah.
We're going to do that O song now. What's your age?
I'm 38.
What kind of? But anyway, let's listen, okay?
How'd I get so old? Crepe paper skin, so folded. Thank you.
but secretly, both you and me know I'll be 17 until the day.
Try to the poison out. And as the blood drips down my dress, it drains away my doubt. I don't go very deep at first. I don't want to end my life.
Yeah. Oh, from Mikhail Tober. Then Ali from France with the... Not France. Japan. Yeah. Kind of the same, but different. Ghost Lands. And then Woody Oppenop with Banzai Universe doing Moonstream. These are some guitar guys. Henry Kaiser with Derek Bailey doing Chrysanthemums. Chrysanthemums. Yeah, I go practice with Henry DeMara. A bunch of John Coltrane to play Saturday night in Santa Monica. Yeah. Now, tomorrow night, I'll do some Stooges like John Coltrane with Perkins and Peter in Hermosa Beach.
Yeah, at the State Rock?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You going?
I was just there for the other...
Were you there? It used to be what, the...
The Pitcher House.
Yeah, Pitcher House. Okay. But I'm really scared about this John Coltrane music. So. But Henry asked me to do it. His pop built all them Liberty and Victory ships. Like
My grandfather was a captain on one of those.
Yeah, he was aluminum.
Very undergunned.
Patrick Grant after that. Polymetric Patterns. That's a guitar man's idea. And then finally, Cutney. Mikhail Tober. Cutney, you know. I told you, Pedro, cut means, yeah. So
Big
I thought
scissors.
It would be a good song last. You want to explain? You don't have to explain.
What's it about?
Or whatever you want to say about it. I mean, you know, a lot of people, I don't want to talk about it. That's why I recorded the song. So.
Well, you know, it's a funny song because it's about cutting, but that's not something that I ever did. But it's more about, like, our maladaptive behaviors. And I definitely have a lot of things that are bad for me that I do.
Self-harm. Self-harm.
Yes. Yeah, self-harm, exactly.
I think
that's
what they
call it. And the
things
that we do in the short term to make ourselves feel better that might not be so good for us in the long term.
Yeah. Like passing?
And for me, yeah, that's one thing. But for me, I have a recurring eating disorder. So when I was on Columbia, when I was signed so young, there was like a lot of pressure on me to look a certain way, and they wanted me to lose weight and things, and I developed anorexia. And throughout my life, whenever I get like really stressed out, it kind of flares up again. And when I was making this record 3.5 years ago, I had like a flare up of it. And so that's what this song is about, literally.
Wow. You know, we got a buddy, a plumber. Well, he does, I think he's in the stage union now up in the city. But when he lived in Pedro, he's a plumber man, Richard fucking Bonney.
RFB.
And he told me about, I think it was San Diego State, Aztecs. He had to replace plumbing in the girls' dorm because they're puking and their bile is eating up the pipes.
Wow.
Right? That's part of this disorder. You want to...
Yeah, that's it's similar. It's another eating disorder, bulimia, when people vomit
that's
their
it.
Food up.
Bulimia.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a big thing. You know, when I was in high school in New York, a lot of the girls had eating disorders because there's just so much societal pressure on women to look a certain way.
Look at the fucking Barbie dolls.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But I think they're changing Barbie doll shapes, right?
I think it's gotten a lot better. There's a lot more diversity of body shapes and more just body acceptance now, you know. I mean, I think it can swing the other way, and, you know, you don't want to encourage people to be unhealthy or, like, really obese or something, but I do think that it's important to represent different body types.
Yeah. I mean, some people, genes. D. Boone, I mean, he could have worked out 23 hours a day. He was going to be a big man. You know?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, everybody has obviously a different genetic makeup and body type.
Of course, of course.
But the American diet isn't great either, so we could all
that's
be doing better
with
that.
Now, what's your next plans?
I'm writing my next record now. I'm working with a lot of different co-writers and producers, and I'm feeling out where the next record is going to go, basically.
And if people want to know about you via the internet, they got to go to Fakelook. Do you have your own website?
So Facebook is really my main landing page. So if people want to find me, my name is Michal Tauber. It's Michaltauber. So they can find me on Facebook that way. Or I'm on Instagram. I'm Michal Tauber Insta. I'm on YouTube. I'm Michal Tauber YouTube.
But, do you have your own website?
I don't have my own website.
Please get one. Please
get
one. Because, no, this is fanzine ethics. I thought when everybody would have their own website, it's like your own fanzine. There's no middle person.
Yeah.
Just not yet. Just keep it in the back of your head somewhere.
I know you hate Facebook.
I use it. Look, the way I look at it is a telephone pole. Okay? There's instant ham. There's shitter. Look, it's telephone pole to put up your flyer, too. But the idea of your own website also, this is all parallel universe. I'm saying you don't get rid of anything, okay? Let the freak flag fly. But that's just only merch stuff. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm
saying. Yeah, no, you're right. I should
I'm not trying to be a purist. I'm sorry about that.
No, it's totally fine. I think you're right. I think there's a lot of negative things about Facebook. I think there's a lot of positive things, too, but obviously it's a mixed bag.
Yeah, of course. It's like a telephone pole. What are you going to staple up on that pole?
Totally.
You're either doing a gig or a flyer. That was D. Boone philosophy of the world. Anything that ain't a gig, it's a flyer. Okay. It's been a big honor to have you on the show. Truly.
Thank you so much for having me. I really, really appreciate it. It was really fun talking to you.
Can I ask you, if I was a more younger person and I was asking you for musical advice, what would you give?
I would say, you know, I wish that young people would just really study their instruments more, because I feel like now it's not about learning an instrument and it's not about becoming really good at something. It's more about wanting this instant fame and recognition. And I think that's sad. That
so you say practice. You know, John Coltrane did 10, 12, Eric Dolphy too. In fact, Eric Dolphy's pop, you know, downtown, inner city, he builds him a prac pad in the backyard so the Dolph could get his thing together. I like that. Thank you so much for being on, and keep on keeping on.
Thank you so much.
Okay, Brother Matt, thank you for your always essential aid and abet.
Indeed.
People, it's been February 7th, 2019 edition of the Bob Peeble Show. Keep your powder dry.
Yeah.